From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 7th day of October, 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about global trade and Brazil's impact across the planet, especially here in the United States. We'll review Gary Schnitke and Joanna Colucci's webinar posted yesterday by the FarmDoc team that focused in on this. By the way, you can see that online at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. to you right now if you'd like. In its entirety, look in the webinar section under Archive for Brazil. It was posted there yesterday. So we'll talk with Gary, or at least hear a portion of what Gary had to say yesterday about Brazilian agriculture, production there, how it competes in the United States, and what this marketing season might look like for them as it relates to both production of corn and soybeans and total yield from that nation. And then as we close out our time for the closing market report together, we'll discuss the weather forecast too, that with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. And if you can stay with us for the whole hour on our home station, you'll hear all of Commodity Week with our panelists today, including Sue Martin of Ag and Investment Services out of Clarion, Iowa, and Alan Brugler of Brugler Marketing and Management in Omaha, Nebraska.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You know, the FarmDoc team has been hosting webinars each Thursday this fall. The one yesterday focused on Brazilian agriculture for the coming growing season. I thought you'd like to hear what Gary Schnitke and Joanna Colucci had to say about the potential size of the corn and soybean crops that will come from that South American nation. Gary Schnitke detailed what his expectations are for this marketing year.
It will be the largest projected grain harvest in Brazilian history. And to give you a feel for what we're projecting, and this is grain harvest, so this covers not only soybeans, which we usually focus on, but corn, wheat, and other items as well. CONAB from Brazil is projecting that total production will be 312 million tons, and that's up 15% from last year. What is going to cause that increase are two factors. First, we're going to see, or we're projected to see, a 2.8% increase in planted area. So Brazil is going to increase plantings, and the projections are for 12% higher yields. And if you're looking at the projections right now, that 12% higher yields would be based on a trend yield. And it's important to remember that Brazil had a drought over its southern area that reduced yields, and that also contributes to our now higher prices.
Again, you're listening to audio from Gary Schnitke's presentation made yesterday during the FarmDoc webinar about Brazilian agriculture. He started off by discussing total production of all crops, some 312 million tons out of that nation this year. That compares to the 270 million tons it produced last marketing year. And then he detailed how explosive the growth of agricultural production in South America, Brazil in particular, has been over the last few years.
As you can see, we're showing a graph here from 2003-04 growing season, when it was 119 million tons, going up to the present 312 million. That happens to be a 160% increase in two decades. So we've seen Brazil grow in grain production, and there is really no reason not to expect them to continue to grow into the future at roughly the same rates. So just continue that trend in the future, and you will see Brazilian production grow.
So that lays out the long-term expectation of competition that Brazil will present on the world and global stage as it relates to all crops, particularly of corn and soybeans. And then Joanna Colucci and Gary Schnitke, at this webinar presentation, which you can watch online right now from the FarmDoc Daily website, went on to detail what this year's primary competition crops with the United States will look like.
We are going to focus a little bit on acres in Brazil right now, but to put that in sort of context, corn and soybean acres is 123.5 million acres in the Corn Belt states there that you see listed on the left. And again, this is just to give you a concept of the acreages that are in Brazil. So we have 123.5 million acres in the states from Minnesota and South Dakota over to Indiana. That again has 123.5 million corn and soybean acres, and a total of 176.1 million acres overall. Again, in the United States, you would probably be expecting that total to increase a bit over time, but it's not because total area is coming into production, but more likely because wheat acres are going down as they have in the past and corn and soybean acres increase. So 176.1 million acres and 123.5 million acres in the US. If we go to Brazil, the total land use is 124 million acres. So that is roughly the size of corn and soybeans in the Corn Belt. So that is the land area that's being used. However, they plant more acres, 189 million acres. And that additional 26.6 million acres is because of double and triple cropping. So again, one of the things that is growing, is important and is growing in Brazil is double and triple cropping. And we are going to actually be discussing that with corn, which is usually, not always, their double and triple or second and third crop. But Brazil is getting more acres because of or more production, not only because land area is coming into production, but also because of the double and triple cropping that is going on.
Brazil, as Gary Schnitke noted during the FarmDoc Daily webinar, only uses about 30% of its land mass for agricultural production. And it takes real economic advantage of this as well, he says.
Brazil is a export powerhouse, production and export powerhouse. We often hear focus on soybeans, and here this graph, if it's that dark blue color, they're first in production and first in exports, and soybeans make up 51% of the world global trade in soybeans. Brazil is also important in a number of other categories, orange juice. And orange juice is also growing as our citrus industry in forest and in Florida has been in decline because of disease and pests. Finally, there's corn, 21%. Again, with second and third crops, those areas are expected to grow in the future. If we're looking at those exports, there was $120 billion of trade from Brazil last year. 47.9% of that came from soybeans, and Brazil's soybean exports accounted for 40% of their total exports. Where those go is China, European Union, and U.S. are the three big three. China is 34%, European Union is 15%, USA is 8%. China is the growing one there, and as China incomes grow, it's not population growth, it's incomes growing there. They import more goods from Brazil and the United States, and the items that they import are soybeans, cotton, sugar, and meats. So again, we see that Brazil is an important producer of not only soybeans, but many other things.
Among those other items is the Brazilian corn crop, which has been having an impact on the corn market over the last several years. They raise three crops during any growing season, and Gary Schnitke says that the seasonality of the marketplace has changed for soybeans already, and that farmers have gotten used to working on a global market in the United States because of the size of the soybean crop that has been coming out of South America, Brazil in particular, and how it competes on the world stage. That is also beginning to happen with the corn market, and he thinks it will be interesting to see how the seasonality in the market changes with the introduction of a larger and larger crop coming out of South America. Speaking of the production side, soybean acreage, as you've already heard, entailed from Gary Schnitke and Joanna Colucci during this Farm Doc Daily webinar in Brazil, will be about 106 million acres total. That's a 4% increase from the 2021-22 crop, and they should produce something like 5.599 billion bushels of soybeans. By comparison, the United States this year will produce 4.378 billion bushels, that according to the USDA's September WASDE, or World Agricultural Supply and Demand Report. That same USDA report projects total corn production in the United States of about 13.94 billion bushels. Brazilian producers in this growing season will produce nearly 5 billion bushels on 55 million acres. That's an increase of 4% over last year. You may learn more about agricultural production in Brazil by watching the webinar online at the Farm Doc Daily website. Look in the webinar's archive. A new president has taken the reins at NCGA, the National Corn Growers Association. Farmer Tom Haig hails from Minnesota and says the organization's first priorities, of course, will be the 2023 Farm Bill and the Next Generation Fuels Act.
You know, with ethanol, a couple of years ago, we started that a new Next Gen Farms Bill Act, you know, and to get that started in out in D.C. Well, you know, luckily enough, we had Representative Butos from Illinois to get it started at in the House side. And we got bipartisan people and politicians, I mean, from both sides doing, you know, signing on to that bill. And this past summer, we also got it started in the Senate with Senator Klobuchar from my state and Senator Grassley from Iowa. So we got it going in the Senate now. So, I mean, the ball's rolling. I think there's a great opportunity for that to follow through, because if we can get a 30% blend, I think if they want to use the science behind our technology, that we can compete with the electric vehicles and can go forward. And, you know, if we can use more ethanol, that just makes more grind for corn farmers down the road. And the other big item we have coming up is, you know, the farm bill that we have coming up. Ours is coming to an end, and the new one here for 2023 is going to be started. And one of the big things there is that our top priority from NCGA is to be leaving crop insurance alone, leave it where it's at. It works. It's a private public entity. And like I say, it's working, and we need that tool in our toolbox to continue down the road in farming.
Tom Haig is the new president of the National Corn Growers Association. It represents nearly 40,000 dues-paying corn farmers nationwide and the interest of about 300,000 growers who contribute through the corn checkoff programs in their states. It also has 50 affiliated state organizations that work to create and increase opportunities for corn growers. On this beautiful Friday, let's check in with Eric Snodgrass at Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Hello, Eric. Sunshine and beautiful harvest weather. Thank you. Because, you know, you need to be thanked from time to time. You know what? Can you talk about the rainfall or lack thereof across the Midwest, the Corn Belt, in the month of September, so far in October as well?
Well, I mean, the reason why you're seeing all this sunshine is because of the high pressure in the midsection of the country. And it just keeps coming. So that clears out the skies. Every time it tries to rain, like it tried to sprinkle a little bit last night, it comes through, knocks the dust down, and it's gone. And we've really had a pattern that's been favoring really high pressure across the midsection of the country. So throughout September, now early October, for a lot of folks that were able to, we've had pretty wide open harvest windows. And, you know, I did drive, 74 to 39 right through the heart of Illinois this past weekend. And I would, just a rough estimate, I'd say I probably saw 25% of the fields that were visible from the road already harvested or being harvested. But man, were folks moving. They were trying to get a lot done. But the places that have been wet has been the Southwest. It's also been where Ian went through last week. And we're still kind of totaling up the amount of damage out of Ian. And it will likely be a top 10 most expensive U.S. natural disaster. But I'll tell you, folks in the Carolinas, they do a lot of double cropping there. They needed more time for the beans and corn to finish after wheat. And so we might see a reduction in their total yield because that rain that came through there from Ian last week was incredibly heavy, 3 to 8 inches across parts of the Carolinas and Virginia. So it was wet there. It was wet to our west, but right tucked in the middle, we've been pretty dry.
Yeah. So the southeast wet, you said a little wet to the west. What about southwest for the winter wheat crop?
Well, it's, you know, down in parts of Kansas, they had a decent rain about, what was that? That was about 2.5 weeks ago. And folks down there were calling that one of those $1 million rains. It was enough to let them get in there and put some winter wheat in. But since then, things have dried back out. I mean, considerably drier. And when you look at the longer term statistics for parts of the winter wheat belt, we've got, you know, some parts of it that are having like near record dryness here for September and early October. So that rain, you know, they needed more. They needed more to get the winter wheat crop to go. And don't forget, they're still coming off of long standing drought that's been in place since last April. So I would say that the conditions in the central plains of the United States are far less than ideal given the lack of moisture there for this winter wheat crop. And by the way, we do grow winter wheat also in the Pacific Northwest, and they're delayed in getting that planted because of really cold weather, and spring just pushed their entire crop calendar back. So we've got, you know, we have issues with our winter crops at this point in fall.
Let's talk about the fall harvested crops. What do the harvest windows look like over the next couple of weeks?
They look pretty good. Around here, we have a front we're going to be watching for mid to late next week. So the systems are right now kind of running over a big ridge in the west. So like California to Oregon is going to have temperatures that are going to be, you know, 10 to 20 degrees above normal. But we're going to be on the eastern downslope side of that trough, or that ridge, excuse me, into a trough. And so we're going to see a couple shots of colder air, even though the temps will rebound after the end of this weekend. Another shot at colder air coming in. That's going to bring a front. That'll be next kind of Wednesday, Thursday timeframe. It'll chase us out of the fields. But after that, we just see another opening. There's more high pressure. There's drier conditions. So hopefully what we get out of that rain next week is it just knocks the dust down, steals a half a day of work, and then we get back to it.
You mentioned that the ridge is going to dump across the top of us. That'll bring cold air. Will it be frosty?
It will. You know, we've got this frost, of course, this weekend that's coming through. There are freeze and frost warnings and advisories in 16 states in the Midwest today into tomorrow. Tomorrow morning, Saturday morning, will likely be our coolest morning around here. Lows right there in the very low 30s, maybe, possibly in some places touching the upper 20s. So that's why we do have the freeze watch in place for us in Champaign County. But like I said, we'll rebound again early next week, but then that cold front comes through again. So it's just that time of year, right? So we get on the roller coaster and we ride it, and it just keeps delivering some cooler weather to us.
So it looks like weather should be pretty open for harvest, although I suspect much of it will spill into the month of November. Any thoughts there?
I do have some thoughts there. And the newest data that just came out last night suggests that at the end of October, getting into the first, you know, 2-3 weeks of November, the Pacific jet seems to want to extend, get a bit more active, and possibly push pretty hard, you know, across the northern tier of the U.S. So what that means is these wide open windows we have now, I don't think they're going to stay as wide open as we get to the very end of October and start the month of November. I expect more routine weather systems coming through. So I don't know if there's a moral to that story. It's if there's an opportunity now and you've got folks to drive a grain cart, then go.
Indeed. Outlook for winter here in the United States, and then a quick view of South America.
Yeah, so we got new long-range data, and what's going to be interesting for people like me is to figure out if this La Nina is, in fact, which it's very strong now, but is it going to fade at the start of 2023. You will likely see two different faces to winter this year. It's going to start off probably relatively quickly with winter systems, and then I think we're going to transition over quite wetter for much of the rest of winter, which means the likelihood of seeing drought expand this winter for the whole of the United States is diminishing with time, and that is a really good thing for us.
And La Nina, of course, impacting South America.
So South America's, we expect Brazil's central and northern growing areas to continue to move quickly. If there's drought risk, it's in southern Brazil and Argentina. And Argentina has had some substantial drought issues. So expect to see more updates on fast planting in big states like Mato Grosso, while drought issues in Argentina are going to continue to be a problem.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you bet.
That's Eric Snodgrass. He's with Nutrien Ag Solutions, and Agrible joined us on this edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. You can find us online, listen to us on demand anytime you'd like. There you'll find our daily programming, the Closing Market Report, the Opening Market Report, Sue Martin in the Middle of the Day, and of course our Commodity Week program. It's a weekly look at what's happened in the world of agriculture. You can subscribe to both the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week as well on your favorite podcast applications, places like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and search us out even in the NPR One app. However you listen to our programming, thank you very much for taking the time and spending it with us here at Illinois Public Media. Commodity Week is next.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Sue Martin of Ag and Investment Services. She's in Clarion, Iowa. And Alan Brugler is here from Brugler Marketing and Management in Omaha, Nebraska. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. We've been on the air for 100 years, serving the agricultural audience since April of 1922. You can find us online today if you'd like, and listen to us as a podcast too at willag.org, willag.org, or just search out Commodity Week or the Closing Market Report for that matter in your favorite podcast application. Sue Martin, Alan Brugler, it's great to have you with us today. Alan, I think I'll start by getting a list of a few items from you and then Sue that we should discuss for the day. What's on your mind?
Well, I think we've got to talk about the USDA reports that are coming out next Wednesday, and we've got to talk about the balancing act we're doing here between recession and the macro investing, and also these fundamentals. The trade's looking at Brazil with a big crop coming on potentially, and what's going on with the biofuels and palm oil. So I've got a lot on my soybean list today.
Sue Martin of Ag and Investment Services, on your mind?
Well, I certainly think I have to agree. I do think with Ellen that the report coming up here next week is a very important one, and especially in the corn numbers. So that would probably be one of the things. And then maybe the global outlook, including what's going on in China.
We'll have more with our Commodity Week panelists, Sue Martin and Alan Brugler, when we return here on Illinois Public Media in just a few moments.